GHRT Rewinds are brought to you by Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Mike and Nate and Harrison teaming up to help you sell your home faster and for top dollar. From Cadillac to Katahdin to Sugarloaf, USA, this is the George Hale Rick Tyler Show. Jim Lebreck, CMS, our tech advisor on energy in Spacious Studio 7A, and you're almost a prophet. We were talking about not having the infrastructure in order to meet any plan, if you want to call it a plan, lowercase p, you use the air quotes on it. And then you spied an item. Is it Tux Terkel that penned this item?
Yeah, last week, Sunday Telegram.
In the main Sunday Telegram. Maybe, right? Maybe he was listening to you.
Well, and he gets my radio shows each week.
So he gets an idea as to what you're talking about. Take us back first. We were talking about, and maybe listeners are getting tired of this, but hang on a second. There's something more to hear about the story, about the what was the energy plan presented by which organization?
We were talking about Efficiency Maine, but issue about shortage of people didn't only apply to Efficiency Maine. It applied to, you know, even the Green New Deal.
Right.
And I was making 4 points to why it was not going to happen. Number one, solar and wind can't even touch the production that fossil fuels put out. So therefore, they're not going to be a viable source of technology to displace all of our fossil fuels.
Right, that was number one.
And then number two, you need a minimum of $100 trillion to make this transformation, just an electricity world, nothing else. And then number three.
And then that is for infrastructure, right?
That is the infrastructure changeover,
okay.
Right.
Okay, number three.
And then number three, I said that you don't have the technical human resources for all the various aspects of the changeover, just for electricity alone, let alone all the other industries and energy industries.
But park right there just for a second. We don't have the HVAC operators. We don't have the people with the technical skills. We don't have the men and women with the tool belts that know how to use the tools to go out and make this transformation. And then tell us about the item that Tux Terkel penned in the Maine Sunday Telegram.
So Tux had an article, Maine ill-equipped to research weatherization goals. And he talked just about insulation here in Maine. Mm-hmm. And I just grabbed a couple of his numbers. There was 2,300 and some odd homes that Efficiency Maine is paying to insulate each year. Now, the insulation people can't find, you know, good employees to work that even know how to basically use some simple tools. And they were complaining about that. But the main thing is, let's just say they get it up to 2,400 homes a year. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to change these homes and insulate them in 10 years to meet the Green New Deal, you know, before the earth dies, at 2,400 homes, at 2,400 homes a year, through Efficiency Maine, we have 500,000 homes to do. That would take over 200 years at this rate. You know, that's just for insulation alone. So these people in Augusta and in Washington that come up with all these harebrained ideas about going to spend $1 trillion and we're going to have all this stuff happen, and we don't even have enough people insulate Maine homes, especially after all these years.
Okay, ludicrous. Let me argue the other side to you, okay?
Is there another side?
Yes, there is. Hang on a second. I'm going to make this point to you. Once we are truly in a crisis, then we'll find a way to make it happen. Once we're truly in a crisis, picture this. You and your family, okay, are stuck out in a blizzard and you're off on the side of the road. Your car's broken down and you look over and there's a camp over there that's unoccupied. Do you bust the window to get inside to save your family? Yes, you do, because you're in a true crisis. All right. Once we reach energy true crisis mode, then we'll make all these necessary changes. We'll get all the people in place to make these infrastructure changes. But we're not in a crisis. We're not truly in a crisis. Our lights are on. We've got food and grocery stores.
I'm glad you mentioned broken windows, because I use this analogy all the time. You know, when people say, oh, these things like solar and wind create good jobs, right? Well, they don't. They're all tax-funded jobs. You know, it's money coming from the taxpayers to pay that. It's not coming from the free enterprise. So I always said that, you know, if you want to create good jobs, glazers get, you know, $20, $25 an hour. So you just go around and break windows and hire more glazers, and then you can build up an economy. Or you have people shovel sand from one pile to another, and the next shift shovels it back and pay them good union wages. You know, those are stupid things.
I bet in your analogy you don't use sand, however, do you? You use something else.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
Jim Labreck, CMS, or tech advisor on energy. You got a question? 1-800-966-1039. You can join the conversation. 1-800-966-1039. Or send your text messages, and I'll check them in the MTG text file here at 601-207-GHRT, 601-207-4478.
So we had another guy call in last week that said, or text in, that said, you know, it would take him 8 years to get a generator in. That's how long it would take, remember? A big generator.
Okay.
Right? And I said, there's just hundreds and hundreds of those types of things. Well, where do you get all the expertise? I'll give a little bit about what I do. Mm-hmm. I build highly technical thermodynamic products for the supermarket industry, which is the number one consumer of commercial energy, yep. Right? Yep. And so I have thermodynamics. I have electrical engineers for power, electronic engineers, software engineers. I have professional pipe fitting people, assemblers of electric panels and stuff. Mm-hmm. I have engineers to do application engineering, system engineering, documentation, CAD work, on and on. Okay. Well, if you wanted to multiply that times thousands of times, where are you going to get all the people? I know I have a hard time finding them, just like everybody else.
Well, we can't find enough people to flip burgers, let alone flip a switch.
But coming to your point about we always make it happen, what I've had to do to make a product that is ready for the millennials coming along that are not as well qualified as the technicians of the past is I've had to sacrifice some efficiency for simplicity.
So, hang on, I want to let that sink in.
I've had to sacrifice efficiency for simplicity. To make it so that it doesn't take as much people with as much fundamental knowledge, basically parts changes.
Okay.
Right? And that kind of thing. Okay. And it has to be an easy part to change. And they all have to be the same all the time. Right? Because you can't have anybody to go in there with a mind that can understand things and then figure out what has to be done. They have to go there as a procedure now. That's what we're getting through our system here today.
Okay. Although I'd like to think there are a lot of great education opportunities. If I could get Colin or Ian interested in electrical engineering, they could probably have themselves a nice job, and I'll be in a nice nursing home someday because they'll be making boku bucks.
Right, and they'll be making the HVAC control system keep you warm.
So I'll hope.
Yeah.
What was the takeaway from Tux Turkle's article? Is there a silver lining here? Did he give an indication that, we sorely lack the people to meet the weatherization ambitions of any plan in the state of Maine? Okay. But is anyone on the case here other than you?
Oh, I have no idea, and I didn't follow up with Tux, but I'll tell you, I was happy to see him come in, and he produced a bunch of numbers, how many people were employed, how many dollars a year they spend for Efficiency Maine, how many homes they do, that type of thing. So that's how he could take the 500,000 homes and divide it by the 2,400 you do a year and come up with over 200 years of work for that. For that level of employment. So even if that's all we want to do is improve efficiency and insulation in the state, we'd need a lot of people if we wanted to do it in a short order, like 10 or 12 years.
Okay, so weatherization, insulation. By the way, we've launched that as the WVOMFM.com question of the day. Is your home weatherized? Now, what's interesting is the great lack of response we're getting to the question posted at our Facebook page and on our Twitter feed. Because people don't think about weatherization. People don't think about insulation until it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
But they should be, shouldn't they?
Yeah, well, you know what? People should have been thinking about insulating their homes when they built them since the oil embargo of 73. And a lot of those homes weren't well insulated, even though now what happens, the attitude of people is, I'm not going to spend money on insulation. They'll wait until the cost of energy goes way up, and then they'll cry to the government to say, you got to subsidize me.
You see, once they reach crisis mode,
right,
then it happens. Right.
Now, I'll tell you, but your attitude also changes. Insulation doesn't save quite as much as you think either. I've told the story before, but I'm going to repeat it because it's been a long time ago. Back when Professor Hill worked for what was had a contract through DIC up at the university to do home audits on 600 homes here in down East Maine, low-income homes, back after the oil embargo of 73. And he says it was pathetic. You go into some of these homes and people were all huddled up in the kitchen around a wood stove. They all had their sweaters on. They had a big blanket up in the front room to divide the big dining room from the living room, blanket in the stairway going upstairs.
Oh, you're taking me back to my childhood in Presque Isle.
Right.
We did all those things. Yeah.
So anyway, so the did a complete audit, and then the government says, go ahead and upgrade these new heating systems, new insulation, caulk seal, new everything, right? And then they went back 2 years later, did a post audit, and they're still using the same amount of oil. And the reason is that all of that efficiency was turned into quality of operation, a quality of life. Now, you go in the same house when they went to do a post audit, and they have T-shirts on. There's no more blankets hanging out everywhere.
Yep.
And they keep the thermostat cranked right up there all the time.
Cranked right up to 75.
They're not burning wood, you know, and that kind of thing.
Well, you made a similar point about our use of electricity, because when we get the tools and the gadgets, we start using them, and we throw conservation and efficiency right out the window.
Well, I'll tell you a similar story where I learned from this with Dick Hill. And when I was teaching a program at the Central Maine Power Company in Augusta, they had, remember back in the days when the legislator says, we want CMP and Emera, well, back then Bangor Hydro, to spend all of our money on efficiency instead of building a new plant. If we make things more efficient, then we don't need to have money for a new plant. Uh-huh. And it was called the avoidance project here or something like that. Well, I was teaching the refrigeration, teaching engineers from CMP all over the state, refrigeration, air conditioning. I sent them out on a project, and one guy comes back with a project. It's a store across from a factory, and he says, man, we can save a ton of money here. We can really improve the efficiency. They have a big air conditioner. It runs all the time, but the door's open because the heat from all the freezers and ice cream freezers and beer coolers and soda coolers and stuff is putting so much heat in the room that the air conditioner can't keep up. They have the door operating. The ice cream's off and his beer's cold. And I said, yeah, you can improve the efficiency 50%, but we can't save any energy. And they said, what? So we did the project. And afterwards, they used the same amount of energy. The compressor still ran all the time, but all of the energy efficiency was turned into quality of operation. The ice cream was now hard, the beer is cold, and the soda was cold, and the room was comfortable. Okay.
There's got to be some social scientist that's made the graph, and she or he have discovered at what point in time people actually embrace the necessity for conservation to bring the costs down and sacrifice some of that quality of life.
Well, that's a description for a sociologist. I had a sociologist I worked with, Dr. Simcock from Miami University of Ohio, that was studying the obstacles and resistances to implementing new technology in this country versus Japan. And he followed me around. He had patents on the first ozone-friendly refrigeration systems and highly efficient. And he was looking at what the obstacles and resistances were. So he followed me all over. If I went to give a lecture in Chicago, he was there. If I went to France, he was there. Mm-hmm. And he's writing a textbook for schools, and he made it very clear that the obstacles and resistances are not technical, they're social and political.
Oh, you said a bad word. You said political.
Right.
GHRT Rewinds, brought to you by your hometown real estate team, Laughlin and Wolfington Realty. Thinking about selling your home? Call 629-9211 and start packing.